You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now with 91450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. If you're joining us for the program, as we come to you from Concord Orthopedics, this hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the show brought to you by Concord Orthopedics. Experience the difference of true specialty care by going to Concord Orthopedics. For more information, check out ConcordOrtho.com. I'm going to be joined on the program today by Dr. Ron Resnick, who specializes in foot and ankles, and he joins us right now on the program. Dr. Resnick, how are you?
I'm good, very good. Good to be back.
It's great to have you here on the program. So I want to focus today a little bit on the different philosophies on treating different types of foot and ankle injuries in sports. And, you know, we'll start with the Jones fracture, which is an injury which is common amongst basketball players. And, you know, I'm curious as to how you as a surgeon, you know, weigh the different things that are taking place, because you follow very closely, you know, what is taking place with professional athletes, what's taking place amongst your peers. So how do you make a determination as to what is, you know, the best way to treat certain injuries?
Well, the Jones fracture is a great topic to talk about, because, first of all, we need to define what exactly a Jones fracture is. There are bones in the middle of the foot called the metatarsal bones, and a Jones fracture involves the proximal, the base of the fifth metatarsal. But location is everything, and just a quarter of an inch of where the bone breaks makes a huge difference in terms of how we treat this. So if you actually break the proximal fifth metatarsal very close to the base of the bone, that's not a Jones fracture. We call that a base of the fifth metatarsal fracture, and the bone in that area heals very well, and the treatment for that is very, very different than a Jones fracture. If you have a base of the fifth metatarsal fracture that's not a Jones fracture, we put you in a removable cast, you can walk on it, it almost always does well. A lot of times when people go to an urgent care, the emergency room, they don't really know the subtle differences between the two, and they'll tell you you have a Jones fracture, and people come into the office and they're very worried, and we're able to explain to them that the good news is they don't have a Jones fracture. So the Jones fracture happens a little bit more distal in the proximal portion of the fifth metatarsal. So typically it's happens about an inch from the base of the bone. It's the area where the bone goes from being wider with a bone that heals better to the shaft, which doesn't heal as well, and the blood supply to that area isn't as good. So that's the area where people get a Jones fracture. Now in the past, we treated Jones fractures without surgery. You still have a pretty good chance of healing it. Maybe 80-85% of the time they'll heal without an operation, but we treat it very differently. You go into a cast, you're on crutches for a period of time, you're in some type of immobilization, usually for about 3 months, maybe even longer. More recently, we've tried to speed up the healing process, and we have an operation where we can actually put a screw into the break. We put a screw down the middle of the bone to try to speed up the healing. Now, what this does is it gets you off crutches faster. Usually it heals faster. Doesn't guarantee that it's going to heal, but the chances are better. So the big question is then, if you have a true Jones fracture, how do we decide which way to go? And it's a very individualized decision. And when someone comes in to see me for that, we go through the two different types of treatments. Now, if you watch sports, if you're a professional athlete, you get an operation. Absolutely, no question. Basketball seems to be a sport where the athletes, there's more forces on the foot, and they tend to get more Jones fractures, I think, than in other sports.
How do you get them?
It's more you twist your foot, usually. Sometimes it could be stress-related. Now, if you're not a professional athlete, if you're a college athlete, you're a high performance high school athlete, usually, again, will kind of think of doing the surgery for that because these people want to get back more quickly than not. The other people who will tend to operate on is if I have a young mother who can't be on crutches for an extended period of time, or somebody who needs to be on their feet more quickly, that's another type of person who will operate on. Now, on the other hand, if you have somebody who has a lot of medical issues and other things that would go against doing surgery, non-surgical treatment is absolutely an accepted way of treating it.
That is Dr. Ron Resnick joining us here at Concord Orthopedics. This hour, the program is presented by the Concord Food Co-op as well as ARP New Hampshire. And this segment of the show brought to you by Concord Orthopedics. I want to get into the controversy about high ankle sprains in sports in a second, but I want to stick with basketball for a bit because when it comes to the foot and the ankle, I don't think there's any more demanding sport than basketball. Perhaps you would argue that, but you should think of the constant turns, the fact that your ankles are under a lot of stress because, particularly if you're defending, you're moving along with another player who will be making quick moves. You see a lot of quote-unquote ankle breakers on SportsCenter and on highlights where you'll see a crossover dribble and a guy will just fall down as a result of not being able to stay with it. So is basketball the most challenging sport for the foot and the ankle? And are there long-term effects to playing basketball on the foot and the ankle? We know about the knee and the impact of running on that hard surface on a continuous basis, and that can create difficulty for athletes post-career. But does the same thing happen for the foot and the ankle?
That's a good question. I don't really know the answer to that. I do know, and I do agree with you, I think basketball is one of the toughest sports. They're jumping. They're landing hard. They can step on people's feet. It's a lot of pivoting and quick motion. So the foot and the ankle are subjected to a lot of stresses. I think probably the most common injury in basketball are sprains. Mm-hmm. And she might say, well, sprains are very common. Probably the more... And most people recover from sprains very nicely. I think the more debilitating injuries are probably in other sports where you have kind of career-ending type injuries. You don't really see a whole lot of career-ending type injuries to the foot and the ankle in basketball. There have been a couple of Achilles tendon ruptures recently that have happened, but that's actually a more recent thing than I recall. But I think more of the truly, really bad foot injuries are probably football.
A lot of times basketball players will talk about the wear and tear that occurs over a long period of time and losing their step and things of that nature. And there's obviously a lot of research has been put into overuse with the arm and throwing in baseball and such. Do you feel that there is a an overuse issue in regards to the ankle, the knee, and the foot? In that, if you play too much, there'll be a period of time where you may not. That'll kind of limit your shelf life as a player.
Oh, absolutely. I think that athletes are suffering from overuse at all stages. In fact, I think the professional athletes have it right because the professional athletes play and then they have an off season. The kids who are younger in middle school, high school, even college, they're playing year round and they don't rest. And I think they're more apt to get these overuse type injuries because they don't have an off season.
And they also don't have load management where they don't have the off season and then they're constantly playing. The NBA is looking at this at the kind of on the back end and saying, yeah, if you're LeBron James and you're performing at a peak level, if you're Kawhi Leonard, we don't want to put your whether it's injuries that you currently have or could have in the future, we want to try to limit you in back-to-back situations. So I think it's definite that there's a a real tangible feeling that whether it is the foot, the ankle, and the knee, or other parts of the body, that teams are very cognizant about making sure that players don't play too much or limiting practice time in the NBA, having it structured or having things that where the players are staying in condition but away from the court and limiting the time that you're on the court during the season.
That's absolutely right. In all professional sports, there's a preseason. You don't just end your time off or doing something else and then come right in and play at 100%. Whereas, you know, the kids who are in, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school, you know, they go from one sport to the next. If they've, you know, even had time off in the summer, they come back and there's no 6-week preseason. They come in and they have tryouts and they're 100%.
Some kids are playing 2-3 sports at once during a season as well. I want to talk about high ankle sprains, and this seems to be one of the, you know, the major points of contention within your field at this point is how you go about treating high ankle sprains. And this, as you mentioned before, has become really a topic of conversation because Alabama, the football team, decided to operate on an individual who had a high ankle sprain.
It's become more of a controversial topic, although in terms of how to treat high ankle sprains, I still think the current treatment thought process hasn't really changed despite what's happened down in Alabama. So a high ankle sprain is a worse sprain than just your average everyday sprain. There's different ligaments around the ankle, and there's a ligament that's a little bit above the ankle that gets injured with a high ankle sprain. And unfortunately, a high ankle sprain takes longer to get better, but in the vast, vast majority of cases, it does get better. So the big controversy is, should you be doing an operation on somebody the next day or the day after for an injury that's going to get better? And I think the vast, vast majority of orthopedic surgeons would agree that you just let it heal up. Now, the quarterback at Alabama had a high ankle sprain last year before the bowl games. He had surgery, and then he was able to play. It was probably about 3-4 weeks later. And then he played the week after also, and he didn't have as good a game. So the question there was, in 3-4 weeks, would he have been able to play without the operation? Now, you look at what they did down in Alabama, and then you take a professional football team, the New York Giants, and Saquon Barkley, who, you know, won the Rookie of the Year. He's one of the best running backs around now, and he had a high ankle sprain this year, and he didn't get surgery. And he was out for 4 to 6 weeks, which is what it usually takes to get better, and he didn't have surgery done. The Giants rookie quarterback, Daniel Jones, has a high ankle sprain, and he didn't get surgery either. They're keeping him out for the rest of the year, and he'll be ready to go next year without an operation. So at least in my mind, that's the best way to treat it.
So is really the only time to operate is if you can gain some tangible benefit in terms of the time period of recovery, which is proven. Do you see it that way?
I think in a professional athlete, that may be the case. But at least in my opinion, I'm a little bit more on the conservative side that, you know, unless there's a clear advantage to doing the surgery, I'm not sure you want to do surgery. So the whole thing with the high ankle sprain is, could they get him back playing sooner if they did surgery on it? And, you know, to save a week or two, in my mind, I'm not sure that's worthwhile. Now, the Jones fracture thing that we talked about will get the person back sooner, but it also has a higher chance of healing the injury, and it also has a higher chance of preventing a re-injury. So that's why I think that is you know, reasonable to go ahead with fixing a Jones fracture. We can go with Achilles tendon ruptures also. There's two ways of treating Achilles tendon ruptures. You can treat it surgically and non-surgically. Pretty much the recovery is the same. So you say, why do we do surgery? You get a little bit stronger repair and a less chance of re-rupturing. So the higher end athlete, you're going to push towards surgery.
So final thing is on the Alabama situation. So they're trying something that's basically experimental, I would say, correct?
In my mind, yes.
Okay. So how do you go about determining whether you can have success with a, you know, treating an injury a different way or surgery unless there is that experimentation? So in other words, how were these, you know, the foundations of, you know, orthopedic medicine, you know, founded to begin with other than, you know, trial and error, correct?
That's correct, yes.
So I can see, you know, I can see their side of it where you have a, you know, doctor, they have the situation with the quarterback, he thinks he can do something, so you try it and then you see, and then we can, and individuals in your industry can debate whether or not it is the, you know, the best way to go about doing it, whether there is a, you know, a tangible benefit, because, you know, as is the case with anything in science, in my view, you have to, and analytics, like you have to have a number of circumstances take place, and then the determination can be made as to whether, you know, that is the best course of treatment.
I think that's a good point. I think in the Alabama issue, and I could be wrong, I think there's some very strong outside financial incentives to what they did.
Yeah, and I think that can be, you know, said for a lot of college and pro situations as well. And it's a very good topic of conversation because, you know, is that the best thing for the athlete? And as you referenced, there was the first game and then there was the second game, which he did not perform as well. And perhaps if the ankle were allowed to heal naturally, then it would have been stronger for the second game, is your view?
It's possible. Again, you know, what I see time and time again is that, I mean, surgery is a great thing, but surgery is not like going out to dinner. Mm-hmm. Things can go wrong during surgery. You can get an infection. You can not heal. You can have complications even from the anesthesia. So to put somebody at that risk to gain a slight advantage, that's a topic for discussion.
I think a good point, too, in conclusion, is that a lot of times I think people feel like, well, I need to do something. Like, I can't just sit around and let the injury heal, particularly if you're a professional athlete. If you have an option on the table, like, you want to take the option that's given. Like, well, we could just let it heal, or we could do this experimental surgery. I think that a lot of times the fact that people want to see, you know, something done or to get better a little bit quicker, particularly in a situation like that, will lend them to want to take the surgery option when, as you referenced before, there's a lot of potential side effects with the surgery.
And again, you know, sometimes you're looking at the present and not thinking about the future. So doing the surgery where they operate on the Alabama quarterback, that was good for right now, but down the road, is that going to be better for his ankle? And I don't think anybody knows that.
Dr. Resnick, it's always great to see you.
Good seeing you too.
That is Dr. Ron Resnick with Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program presented by AARP New Hampshire as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and that segment of the show brought to you by Concord Orthopedics.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.